I think we're listening. I think we're talking to Sean.
Good morning, WMNF World. This is Midpoint, your mid-morning, mid-week, mid-Florida source for news and public affairs with a local perspective. I'm your host, Shelley Reback. First of all, I want to wish everyone a happy Black History Month. We should all be celebrating this month because Black history is history, no matter how hard our governor and legislators try to erase it. With that said, I'm really excited for today's show because we have some super stellar guests today who are going to talk with us about what is happening on the ground in Florida politics and what is happening in the legislature. Florida House Democratic Leader Fentress Driscoll is going to be with us today around 10:20 or 10:30 after she wraps up a press conference about the legal arguments that are taking place this morning in the Florida Supreme Court on whether Florida voters will be able to vote to protect reproductive rights on the November ballot. This is the case where the Republican Attorney General, Tampa's own Ashley Moody, is trying to keep Florida citizens from exercising their right to direct democracy by putting an amendment to the Florida Constitution on the ballot to protect abortion in Florida. That argument is going on in the Florida Supreme Court right now. And while we hope you'll stay right here in Midpoint with us, if you have a burning desire to listen to that argument, you can tune into that on the Florida channel or the court's Facebook or YouTube pages. But I promise you, this show will be just as interesting today. My first guest is Tom Keene. Tom, who is an aerospace businessman and a former Navy flight officer with 21 years in the military, is the newly elected State House Representative from District 35 in Central Florida. It is Eastern Orange County and Osceola County, east of Lakeland and Kissimmee, and west of Melbourne, and the Space Coast, I think. But basically, he's southeast of Orlando. Representative Keene just took office on January 16th after his big win in a special election that was called to fill a seat left vacant after Governor DeSantis appointed Republican legislator Fred Hawkins to serve as another president of another Florida state college. In a huge upset, Representative Keene, a Democrat, won his seat over the Republican, Erica Booth, a conservative Osceola School Board member. And he's here on Midpoint to tell us how he did it. So welcome, Representative Keene, and congratulations on your victory.
Good morning, and good morning, Tampa. Good morning, Shelley. It's great to be here.
I'm so happy you're here with us, and I'm happy we can hear you. You're coming to us from Tallahassee, I guess.
I am. We're up in session right now.
Before we get too deep into what's happening in Tallahassee, tell us about your district. Is it mostly rural or suburban? Do you have any major cities in your district? And who are your typical voters?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm sure the folks in Tampa will like to hear. We're a neighbor of Disney. We're serving two counties, Orange and Osceola, as you pointed out. Most of the voters live in Orange County. And then Osceola County is much more rural. About 20% of the voters and 100% of the cattle are in Osceola County.
100% so of the cattle?
Yeah, 100%. not exactly. Maybe 98%. We've got, it's a huge geographic district. It's 120 miles from one border to the other, from the northern border to the southern border. So it's a very large geographic district, one of the largest in the state. Of course, we're all representing about the same amount of people, about 180,000 people.
So most of your voters, since the cattle don't vote, I mean, were they like more suburban residents, like a suburban Disney, or did they consider themselves suburban Orlandoans, or, you know, how would you characterize your voters?
Sure. So I would say a lot of the voters would say exactly what you just pointed out. They're suburban voters. This is the suburbs of Orlando. Mm-hmm. But again, when you get into Osceola County, it becomes a lot more rural. And actually in Orange County, a little bit toward the east, it's rural there as well. So, but most of the voters are living in the suburban subdivisions of East Orlando.
Okay. And what, when you were out on the campaign trail, what did you hear from your voters in your district about what was important to them? What were they voting on?
Right. So probably the thing that I heard the most about was property insurance and the property insurance crisis that we have today in Florida. So that was the one of the top issues. And then another issue that we heard about a lot from women, and I let them bring that up, was reproductive freedom. And you just pointed out right now at the Florida Supreme Court, they're hearing whether or not to put that amendment on the ballot to let voters make a decision on where we should go relative to that topic.
Now, were you surprised that the voters in your district, that the reproductive freedom issue resonated so much with these mostly suburban and rural voters?
No, actually, I wasn't surprised. You know, we had been talking to voters, you know, prior to the general election in the primary, and we heard it loud and clear. So that was the focus of my campaign during the general part of the campaign, because we heard that loud and clear, and those two issues were the ones that we wanted to run on.
And you ran against a woman, a conservative woman, who was on the Osceola County School Board, but she seemed to sort of adopt the Trump platform, didn't she?
She did. So she was definitely more of a moderate when she ran for school board last year, but she became increasingly right-wing as she was in the primary, and I think that she couldn't tack back to the center because people found out what she was really about.
Yeah, so you were endorsed by the Orlando Sentinel and also by the Planned Parenthood PAC, their political arm, and Erica Booth, your opponent. She sort of avoided the media, it seemed, and she seemed to run her campaign on fighting the woke mob, as she put it. She seemed to endorse the Trump and the MAGA agenda. And so I'm wondering if in your campaign, do you think that voters are tired of that message, or are they just more ready to vote on real issues of concern to them, like reproductive freedom and high insurance premiums and unaffordable housing costs?
Well, I think you hit it. Hit the nose on the. I think you hit it right there, because what we found out was that she was running on, if you will, a national agenda, and that didn't resonate with voters. They wanted to hear, you know, somebody that was going to represent them in Tallahassee. So that's the reason why we stuck with those two issues, to make sure that we had that clear distinction and that voters knew where I stood.
I think it's really important. I think your election was important for so many reasons. First of all, because it seems to have energized Democrats and has, motivated Democrats and has suggested to the world at large that Democrats in Florida aren't dead, that there's still a viable path to victory for Democrats in Florida, despite, you know, the 2022 election where DeSantis prevailed by like 19 points. And so I think that it's really important to pay attention to your particular election, given the fact that you were in a Florida sort of representative district of suburbanites and rural voters, and that your platform was the one that they chose to send to Tallahassee. One of the things that really, really fascinated me about your race was that, and this was really extraordinary, but after the race was won, you can look at the statistics from the Supervisor of Elections, and you can see that there were more Republican voters than Democratic voters who voted, but you still won. So how do you think that happened?
Well, it happened because we got, you know, all of the doors that we knocked on, all of the hard work that we put in to let voters know exactly where I stood. And those two issues that we talked about really resonated with some Republicans and with a lot of the non-party affiliated folks that weren't registered as a Republican or Democrat. We won that group handily, and that's what carried us through. So I was very excited that we won on January 16th, and then we're bringing that message up here to Tallahassee that Democrats can, in fact, win in Florida.
Yeah, I think that that is just a stunning data point, a stunning fact, is that you won with NPAs. You won with voters who are not affiliated with either party. because it suggests that they're persuadable, that when you, you know, run a campaign, as you apparently did, on issues close to home, rather than, you know, this national fight between, you know, the woke and the unwoke, or however she wanted to put it. When you run on issues that are close to people at home and you talk about how you're going to make their life better, these no party affiliate voters are persuadable. I think that's a critical point for the Democrats, especially, you know, to learn from your election. You won also, even though you were wildly outspent in advertising dollars by the Republicans. I think they spent more than twice as much as you had. So how were you able to get your message out?
Well, the first thing I would say, we were outspent. There's no question about that. But Representative Driscoll, as the leader of Democrats up here in the Florida House, decided that she wanted to invest in this race, and she invested early. They were on the ground renewing vote-by-mail requests prior to the primary. They didn't put their thumb on the scale, but they were out talking to voters and getting them to renew their vote-by-mail requests. So they did that up front and early. And those resources that she invested in really paid off, I think, in the general. The other thing I would say is we don't necessarily have to be on parity when it comes to advertising, but we did have enough resources to get on television locally here in Orlando. Maybe not as much, but the voters still heard us. And once they heard our message, that's what helped us cross the finish line at first.
Yeah. And when you talk about Representative Driscoll investing in your race, you're talking about like the House Victory Fund, essentially. You know, I mean, part of her job is to elect more Democrats to the House. And so, and you're talking about the Florida Democratic Party. And so did they put boots on the ground in your district to go, like, door to door and talk to voters?
Sure. So it was all hands on deck. So I give all the credit to Leader Driscoll, but Nikki Fried, as the chair of the Florida Democratic Party, brought resources to bear as well. Plus, we had an army of volunteers, which was fantastic. One of the districts that I overlap with was Congressman Maxwell Frost, and he brought his team out.
I see.
And we had some other elected officials that brought their volunteers out as well. So literally it was, to use a nautical term, all hands on deck, and that's how we won.
Oh, that's really good to hear that you had so much help. And I'm sure you had your own people, local people, on the ground talking to their neighbors, talking to the people at the supermarket or what have you about the race. Now, this Florida House District 35 special election, it came like just 1 week after the legislative session began. So this timing is difficult for you because you were elected past the deadline. You missed the deadline for filing bills this session. But you can still vote on bills that are up for a vote in the House, right? And so as a Democrat, and especially as a Democrat who has no opportunity to sponsor any bills this session, of course, through no fault of your own, Governor DeSantis picked the date of that special election. But I predict a lot of no votes in your future. So tell me, what bills are you particularly interested in voting on now that you're there?
Sure. So I will say that I can't file any bills, obviously, because the session had already started, but I have been able to co-sponsor several bills already. So, and I'm specifically looking at bills that, if you will, are more bipartisan right now, that focus on veterans issues and also potentially with some insurance issues coming up. We just heard a great workshop, a bipartisan workshop on property insurance reforms that I think will get some momentum next year. So we're seeing some movement there. So I am on the banking and insurance subcommittee, which was fantastic because that's an area that I want to really focus in on. And that specific committee will look at hoping to, you know, bring some of those insurance rates down over the next couple of years.
Yeah, in fact, there's a new proposal being floated to totally reform the way hurricane insurance is handled in Florida, right? To make everybody get their hurricane insurance through Citizens and have private insurance companies only deal with, I guess, everything else, every other kind of hazard that you could be insured
for. Yeah, that's the gist of what they're talking about. It obviously is in the early stages, and so I know there'll be a lot of hard work that'll have to go into that, but it was a bipartisan effort, and that's the part that really encourages me going forward, both this year and next year, is that we do have folks across the aisle that want to solve this problem. It's going to take a lot of hard work. It's going to take a lot of late nights, a lot of engagement from all the stakeholders, insurance companies, as well as the consumers themselves. We've got to solve this crisis.
Yeah. I worry about these initiatives that start out bipartisan, and then, you know, it turns out to be an election year. And, you know, what we've seen happen with the immigration bill in Washington, for example, is the Republicans, you know, starting out agreeing on a bipartisan basis to do immigration reform, and then, you know, putting the kibosh on it late in the game because they don't want the president to get credit for it. And of course, you know, there'll be a gubernatorial election coming up as this proposal gets developed and worked through the legislature. So I wonder if it will ever see the light of day, because it's always an election in Florida.
Well, there is always an election, but we really need to deliver for our voters. And I think this is a great first step. It will take some more time before it actually comes out as a bill, but we have to take these steps now if we want to, you know, bring property insurance reform for all Floridians.
Right, right. So because this was a special election, do you have to run again in November?
Well, I haven't filed for re-election yet, but, you know, stay tuned to this channel, and I'll let you know after session is over. I want to make sure that I'm getting the work done up here in Tallahassee first before I worry about this November. But yes, I will have to file for re-election if I want to run again in November.
This November, November 24th?
Yes, ma'am.
Right away.
Yep. It's like a nonstop campaign.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You barely have a chance to sit in that seat in Tallahassee before you have to be back out campaigning then, if that's what you're going to do. And I have to say, given all the investment that went into getting you there, I'm sure that all those people who supported you want to see you back out on the campaign trail for that November election date.
Yeah, I wore out a couple pair of sneakers on the campaign trail, and I've got a couple new ones to go out again when we file for re-election.
Okay. All right. Well, is it July that you have to do that by? Is it?
Yeah, I don't know the exact dates. I actually haven't looked at there's a calendar out now, but it's coming up.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Well, I know that Representative Driscoll, Leader Driscoll, is going to join us in a little bit, I hope.
She's here right now, standing by.
Oh, she is. Okay. All right. Well, first of all, let me thank you very much, Representative Tom Keene, newly elected from a special election in Florida House District 35, the suburbs of Orlando, was with us. And we thank you very much. And again, congratulate you on your victory. And I hope to speak to you again in the future.
Well, thank you so much and have a great morning.
All right. Now, we're going to bring in Florida House Democratic Leader Fentress Driscoll, our own from the Tampa area, and she is just joining us on Midpoint today.
Hi,
Fentress. Thank you for being with us. I know you're so busy, and I do appreciate you giving us this time. We have so much to talk about.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Shelley.
Let's start with the big news of the day, the argument before the Florida Supreme Court on whether Florida voters will have the chance to vote in November on protecting reproductive rights in the Florida Constitution. What have you heard about the argument today? It's going on now, right?
Yeah, actually, I just came back from the Florida Supreme Court where we listened to oral arguments. And first of all, let me just say that it was amazing to be in there for something so historic. And to be able to hear the questions of the justices, I don't think I have a sense of how they're going to vote, but the questions that they asked, I thought were very thoughtful and very good. And one of the justices, Justice Curiel, he said, really the role of the court, and just so that everybody understands, right?
Like, yes.
The role of the court is to determine whether or not this language misleads voters. And the way that Justice Curiel put it, he said, so let's say that this language is a wolf, right? The ballot language is a wolf. The role of the court is to determine whether or not it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. I thought that was just the perfect way to put it. And he said, can you really say that it is if the plain language of the ballot initiative also matches with the summary of the ballot initiative? Like, how could things be more clear? So that was encouraging to me because that's exactly what we want. We want the Supreme Court justices knowing, understanding, and thinking that this language is clear, which it is.
Yes, there's no doubt. And the language of the summary, it is the language of the ballot measure in this case. It's not like there's 40 pages of a ballot measure and then, you know, a short summary. This is it. This is pretty much it. So you either understand it or you don't. It's either clear or it isn't, right?
Yeah, that's right. And one of the justices, I think it might have even been the chief justice, he was like, the people of Florida aren't stupid. Like, you know, they can read this. They can figure this out. So I felt very encouraged by all of that.
Oh, that's good. That's so good to hear. This case is absolutely critical to protecting women's bodily integrity. Something like 70% of voters agree that abortion should be protected and it should be a decision between a woman and her doctor, not a woman, her doctor, and the state government. Right.
But listen, not a woman, her doctor, state politicians, every committee chair that heard the bill. Like, what are we really doing in Florida right now where we can't let families make decisions that are best for them? And understanding that, right, these are decisions of the heart and home. These are deeply personal, deeply private decisions. And frankly, I don't need 120 state representatives and, you know, 40 state senators and the governor and the attorney general in the examination room with me.
Right.
And that's really what the attorney general of Florida is asking to happen by trying to get this initiative kicked off the ballot.
Right. Right. And you're a lawyer, Fentress, also. And you can help us understand. But one thing that occurs to me is that this case is important in ways beyond just its importance to women's reproductive freedom, because it will influence whether Florida voters will continue to have a realistic opportunity to amend their state constitution by direct democracy, by putting out a citizen's petition and convincing enough voters to sign it in order to put an amendment on a ballot. So help us understand why that is an issue in this case as well.
Yeah, Shelley, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because there are two ways really to amend Florida's constitution. The legislature can initiate the amendment process, or the people can. And in a state like Florida, where we have had consolidated Republican rule since 1998, meaning that they've had control of the legislature and the governor's mansion, sometimes it can be very difficult for an alternate point of view to rise to the surface. And I'm not even just talking Democratic points of view. I'm just talking about a point of view that's anything other than what they have.
Abortion is the perfect example, with 70% of the voters in favor of, you know, greater reproductive freedom rights for women. And yet the Florida state legislature, with this Republican supermajority, is constraining these rights more and more and more with each session.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so that is the beauty of the direct democracy process and being able to bring a ballot initiative. So more than a million Floridians have signed this petition. I think they were able to get the ballots signed, or the petition signed faster than anyone thought. In fact, they had so many, they had to tell people to stop sending in petitions, which is great. But what I want your listeners to know is that since the time I've been in the legislature, I've watched session after session as the Republicans try to chip away at this direct democracy process. They want to make it harder to get initiatives like this on the ballot, which frankly is just what they basically are trying to do, is silence our voices, silence our stories, and inhibit our ability to impact government in a direct way. And it is wrong. I mean, think about it, Shelley, right? I'm elected by 50% plus one of the vote. So that's how I get to have my authority to serve in the legislature. And it's beautiful. And I thank every voter who's ever supported me. But what the Republicans are saying is that for a ballot initiative, maybe it should be like 2/3 vote. It should be more like 66.7. And we'll ask them in committee, so then would you agree to be elected by 2/3 instead of 50%? And then it's always, well, wait, no, you know, hey, listen, you know, the voters know what they're doing. So make it make sense. Be consistent.
Yeah.
And let's not silence the voices of the people.
Yeah. And in fact, there are a number of issues where the people have a position adverse to or different from what the majority in the legislature has done or is trying to do. One of the most significant that's, I'm sure, coming up for consideration is Medicaid expansion. Because at the opening of the legislative session this year, Kathleen Passidomo, the Senate president, announced there will be no Medicaid expansion this year. There will be no Medicaid expansion this year. She came out and said it like that. And yet Floridians want Medicaid expansion. They want greater health care in the state of Florida. And maybe the only way to get it is through a citizen initiative and a petition effort. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think you could be right about that, that we might have to use that direct democracy process to get Medicaid expansion on the ballot. And we talk about Medicaid expansion a lot, so I just want to take a minute to explain what that would mean for Florida.
Yes.
It would mean that nearly 800,000 Floridians who don't have access to healthcare would then have access. And there's this myth that we're talking about people who don't work jobs. That's not true. That would be covered if we expanded Medicaid. These oftentimes are folks who work, but they make too much to qualify for Medicaid, but they can't qualify, or they don't make enough to afford Obamacare. So they're left in this gap. We could expand Medicaid and cover these individuals. It would bring costs down for all of us, because what happens is they don't have primary care physicians. So when things go wrong, they oftentimes wind up in the hospital room, in the emergency room, which is the most expensive form of care. So it would help lower costs for all of us. It would also draw down critical federal dollars and, by some estimates, save us as much as $200 million in general revenue per year.
In Florida.
And Shelley, in Florida.
That could be used for other things in Florida.
That's right. We could use to enhance salaries for our teachers and pay them what they're worth. We could use this to help keep our communities safer. We could use this to fight against the effects of climate change. So there's so much that we could do with that. It actually makes no sense. It's nonsensical for the Republicans to continue to refuse to expand Medicaid, because over 40 states have done this. 40 other states have done it, and Florida has not. So we're left at the kiddies table with states like Alabama and Mississippi, and I don't like to be at the kiddies table.
No, and we have one of the worst records for health care in the country in terms of expense and delivery. And I know that the Republicans have this Live Healthy initiative that they're pushing this session, which is going to take more dollars out of Floridians' pockets to advance health care in Florida, instead of taking the federal money that Floridians have already paid and that could come back to this state to improve our health care here. That's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. We are leaving so much federal money on the table in the state of Florida, aren't we? I mean, this administration has rejected federal dollars that Floridians have already paid into the federal government in their income taxes, but the Republicans in the legislature and in the administration won't allow them to be brought home to make their lives better. They've rejected money for food for hungry kids, for God's sake.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it easier to kick kids off their health care programs. They've rejected money to help people retrofit their homes to make them more energy efficient, to save money on their electric bills, and so much more. That has got to be really frustrating for you, isn't it?
It's really frustrating for me, but I know that it's frustrating for people. And this is why I'm glad that you talk about these topics on your show. And this is why I really try to make an effort to get people to share their stories with me, because I think we have to do that and get a little vulnerable about how these bad policies are impacting us, so we can see our commonalities and build out the diverse coalition that we need to turn things around in the state of Florida. So let me just say a little bit more about what I mean by that, right? Like, to your point about the Republicans, really DeSantis, rejecting federal funds, he likes to do that when he can use it as a political stunt or a talking point for his base. But what I want your listeners to know is that there are billions of federal dollars built into Florida's budget every year. In fact, nearly one out of every $3 that Ron DeSantis spends is a federal dollar. And he should, in fact, be thanking the Biden-Harris administration for the resources that they send down to Florida, because then he takes that money and he'll use it for bonuses for law enforcement or for other projects where he can get a nice headline and make it seem like, you know, he did these things on his own. But the reality is he's doing it in partnership with the feds. So then he'll turn around and bite the hand that feeds him and try to use it as a talking point, saying, well, you know, we're fiscally conservative. We're rejecting these federal dollars. No, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You spend federal money like, you know, like a thirsty person drinks water. Like, let's really talk about what we're talking about. And so this tendency for him to cherry pick when to accept federal dollars and when not to, it's all for political stunts, and it actually has real ramifications, and it hurts people.
That's the thing. Yes, it hurts people.
Yeah. We need people to share their stories.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it, they're kicking kids off Medicaid. They even took it a step further. So far, Florida's government, Ron DeSantis' administration, has kicked off over 400,000 needy kids from Medicaid. He's kicked them off their health care. Now he is suing the federal government to try to make it even easier to prevent kids from getting their health care benefits. So that's particularly cruel.
Yeah, that's something that came up this week, a new lawsuit to try to make it easier to kick kids off their Medicaid. It's just astounding. The cruelty is the point. I mean, and he increased in his budget to something like an additional $6 million to defend all of these legal cases that are being brought against initiatives like, you know, Don't Say Gay, like the DEI, like Disney, like all these cases where the Republican administration is being sued for unconstitutional behavior. Now there's all this money in the budget to defend it rather than just not take unconstitutional actions in the first place. It's insane, you know?
Well, so that would make too much sense, girl. That makes too much sense.
Right. Well, Representative Fentress Driscoll, the Democratic House leader, is with us on WMNF Midpoint. And our time with her is kind of short. So if you have a question for her, I'm going to ask that you email it to me at dj@WMNF, or you can text it to us at 813-433-0885. And if we have time to get to it, I'll try to get to those questions. I do have a question for you here that's been sent in. Somebody wants to talk about the social media ban bill. The governor wants to, and the legislature want to ban social media for kids under the age of 16. And it's still, this is, to me, as a retired lawyer, it just seems blatantly unconstitutional, but it's still moving forward in the legislature. It was passed by the House, and it seems, you know, sort of unrealistic and difficult to enforce. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that was a bill that, I'm not going to lie, it caused tension for me. I ultimately voted for the bill, but you know what was most persuasive, right? Because I was on the fence until the very end, Shelley, honestly. And I have those same questions over enforcement. Like, how are they really going to enforce it? What are the platforms that they're really targeting? But then one of the representatives, Representative Michelle Rayner, who's a member of my caucus, gave her testimony on the floor. And she talked about the hatred that she received over this bill on social media. And she said, if it's difficult for me to process this at age 42, what are we asking our kids to do? So I think that the bill is not perfect. I think it is a step in the direction of trying to protect our kids. I think that in the end, there probably will be lawsuits over it, or maybe there'll have to be a bill to fix it down the line. But I mean, it's just so difficult to know precisely what to do to protect our kids from what's happening on social media. One thing that I could think of, one thing that I would have liked to see in this bill, and there was an amendment put forward by our caucus, but it was rejected, was to change the age to 13 years of age, which probably is would have been a nice compromise, but it's difficult. You know, we're in the super minority. We're working on getting out. Tom Keene is evidence that we can do that. But unfortunately, it was rejected along party lines. So I think there's still more work to do on that bill. But I would agree with you that I also see that there are going to be some challenges to enforcement.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we'll have to have you back to talk about, do a whole show on that social media bill, or because I can't see that as a workable piece of legislation. But we'll leave it there for now. Representative Driscoll is the Democratic leader in the Florida House, and she has probably the toughest job there because she can't really move a Democratic agenda forward because the Democrats are a super minority in the House, as she pointed out. And until we elect more Democrats to the Florida legislature, like we just did, Tom Keene in District 35, until we get more Democrats in the Florida legislature, the Democrats will lack the power to really, truly influence policies and laws in Florida. And you heard some of that from Leader Driscoll just now about how compromises that may make sense are rejected out of hand. And there's really not enough votes to make a difference on that. So besides your job in keeping your caucus together and united as an opposition party, and besides your other job is being the most visible and vocal cheerleader for Democratic policies and positions that won't make it into law, at least right now, it's also your job to help get more Democrats elected to the Florida House to break that supermajority. And you, as we heard from Representative Keene, you were instrumental in Tom Keene's victory. So let me ask you a little bit more about that. Do you really think his victory can be replicated in other places in Florida? And if so, how and where?
Yeah, I do think that we can. And Tom Keene's victory, our ability to get him elected, really is the case study for how when we invest in these races and when we have a good ground game and when there's good coordination across the center-left ecosystem, we can win. So I, as leader, I'm also the chair of the Florida House Democratic Campaign Committee. We raised the resources to invest in Tom's race. I spent over $1.2 million in his race. As soon as the governor called a special election, we put a field team on the ground. They ultimately knocked 69,000 doors. We took that district. We were registering new Democrats to vote and re-enrolling existing Democrats to vote by mail because of the bad Republican laws that kicked everybody off and nobody knew about it. When we set foot in the district, there was a +3 advantage for Republicans in vote by mail. Hmm. By the time of election day, there was a +12 advantage for Democrats.
Wow.
We had a 15-point swing. And so for anybody who says that Florida's dead and that Democrats can't win, they're not looking or they're not listening or they're not paying attention. We can win, but we have to have the money to compete and we have to be able to get on the same page. And so the Florida Democratic Party, Congressman Maxwell Frost, lots of other organizations came in and layered in a volunteer effort on top of our paid effort. And it was beautiful to see everyone working together. We went through redistricting in 2022, Shelley, and frankly, that left some gerrymandering of the state districts, particularly in the central Florida, like the Orange County area, and then also in South Florida. And that's where you're going to see us compete and fight to try to pick up more seats.
So it mostly in South Florida.
South Florida and Central Florida.
South Florida and Central Florida.
Yeah, the Orlando area and in the South Florida area.
So I think one of the points that needs to be made, though, is even though our listeners in the WMNF listening area may not live in one of those competitive districts right now, if they want to see the laws change in Tallahassee, if they want to see a Democratic agenda be able to be passed out of the Florida legislature, they need to help elect more Democrats to the Florida legislature, regardless of where they are. In other words, if there's a seat in South Florida that's mm-hmm. that's winnable, that's viable for the Democrats, maybe our local listeners who don't have a viable challenge in this area can help down there in South Florida with their, you know, with their, they can call, they can send postcards, they can, you know, donate if that's what they want to do. You know, if you want to see more Democrats in the state house, in the state Senate, then that's what you need to do. You know, put your resources where you have a viable chance to win, right?
Yes. And you know what? We're already collecting volunteers for these efforts. So if you're out there listening and you want to get involved and you want to help, you can visit my website, venturesforflorida.com. That's venturesforflorida.com. You can click on the volunteer button and get plugged in because, like Shelley mentioned, we're going to need people. You can send texts from anywhere. You can make phone calls from anywhere. You can volunteer in a way that will help, help move the effort forward, but that also works with your schedule. And here's the other thing about volunteering. Here's the piece that I don't think we talk about as much as Democrats or folks on the center left in the state of Florida. Politics can be really heavy. Florida politics are heavy right now. I think people were depressed in 2022 after the campaign of oppression and DeSantis's bad boss. We need to be back in community with each other again. That is important. We need to remember how much we have in common again, and not just as Democrats, but some Republicans and some independents as well. We need to come together and build a diverse coalition, because Democrats aren't going to be able to carry this alone, right? If you look at the voter registration numbers, Democrats have been falling behind, but you need not let that number be get you depressed. It should just motivate us all the more to make sure that we have strong turnout of our base, but that we're also reaching out to other voters who may agree with us on the issues. So many people do not like these culture war bills. They're mad. They want to talk about property insurance rates and housing affordability. They want to talk about protecting a woman's right to choose, and they think that the legislature went too far. So I think 2024 and beyond will present opportunities for Democrats and opportunities for the center left. But we got to be in coalition with one another first. We have to recognize that we are not in this alone, and that by putting together our modest effort, if we put together our individual modest effort, but put that together collectively, man, a beautiful change is going to come.
So what I hear you saying is that what you've found to be most successful is issue-oriented campaigns, campaigns around the issues, rather than like some savior figure, you know, some really, you know, special kind of figure running for a particular office, that it's more important to speak to the voters about the issues that that candidate may represent. I mean, obviously, you need to have good candidates who can make a good impression on the voters, but yet to really get them motivated, to really speak to them, and like you said, to speak to the NPA voters, to speak to the Republican voters as well, it may be best to really focus on the issues and the differences there. Do you want culture wars or do you want reproductive rights? I mean, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm glad you said that. I do think it's a little bit of both. Like, for example, Tom Keene was just the right guy for this district. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's a naval veteran. He knows this district. He was able to speak to the people in an authentic way. But I think the reason his message resonated is because he was so focused on the issues that the people wanted to talk about. Yeah. When I think about what you're saying, though, in the context of the presidential election, right? I think we have to get pretty clear-eyed that this thing is going to be between Donald Trump and President Biden. Mm-hmm. It is going to be a choice between chaos and potentially the end of our democracy as we know it. And I do not mean that as hyperbole. I'm just basing this on things that former President Trump has said, right? That he would want to be a dictator. It will be a choice between chaos on the one hand and stability, prosperity, and a future for our country on the other. And so I think we need not look to candidates for perfection. Mm. We need not look to candidates and see if we agree with them on every issue. Nobody agrees with one another on every issue, sometimes not even people in the same household, right? And look at the issues that they represent and look at the choice that we have and make it in a clear-eyed way. I know I'm going to be choosing stability and the future of our democracy. I'm honored to support President Biden, and we need to back off of that, of thinking that people have to be so perfect. Nobody's perfect.
Right.
But I think he's right for these times.
Well, speaking of nobody's perfect, states aren't perfect either. So let me ask you, is Florida the forgotten child, the abandoned stray in national Democratic politics right now? Are Florida Democrats going to get any help from the national party, or do they think we're a lost cause?
Listen, I was in Miami last week where the president was there for an event, and I heard him say in a room full of supporters that Florida is in play, that they intend to invest in the state of Florida, and I'm going to take the president at his word.
Okay.
And please, no one understand that part of the reason why I fought so hard for us to win House District 35 is to be able to make the case to our national partners that Florida is not dead. We flipped that seat. That was a Republican seat, and we took it back. We have not had a state legislature special election win since 2018. What we were able to do with our partners there was huge. And so I've been to D.C. I've been talking to our national partners. They're excited about what we did. So I am optimistic that we will have the investment that we need in 2024. Well, but we still have to do the work. We can't rest on our laurels.
Well, thanks for that. I'm glad to hear you say that. A couple things. I have an email here from Beverly from Tampa. She's got a local question. She says, my question is about Hillsborough County roads. Voters here passed a sales tax to get funds to repair our infrastructure. But we were told it was illegal by the courts, and the funds have been held in Tallahassee ever since. We want them to be used for the purpose we selected, and that's transportation in Hillsborough County. So what update can you give us and my neighbors here in Forest Hills? The city of Tampa is especially hard hit. Can you give us an update on the transportation tax money that's still being held hostage in Tallahassee?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Beverly. And it just underscores the willingness of the right to override the will of the people, because the people spoke in this initiative, as you mentioned, in Hillsborough County. There was a Republican county commissioner who said not so fast and sued. And then, like you indicated, the money's been held up in Tallahassee and our Republican-led legislature has refused to give it back to us. What I've been told this year, or in conversations that I've had, I'm hearing that there is a will to get this done this session and to give these resources back to the people of Hillsborough County who so desperately need it. I'm not quite sure what form that's going to look like. You know, I advocate for it to come back, not in the form of rebates, which I think would be very difficult to do to make sure that everybody who paid sales tax is able to get that money back. Instead, it should come back to priority projects that we've identified on the local level to improve transportation and road quality in our county. So that is what I advocate for. And I'm hearing that it'll be done this session. We're just at the midway point, actually, today. It's funny, Shelley, I'm on the midpoint at the midway point during legislative session.
Right. How perfect is that? Point.
Yeah. So we will know quite soon.
All right. Thank you. And thanks for that question, Beverly. Wendy here from Pinellas County wants to thank you for all your hard work and tell you that she's going to volunteer in Pinellas County for the Democrat, I guess, in her House district race there. So I just wanted to share that with you.
I love it. Thank you, Wendy. That's probably Representative Lindsey Cross. So thank you for agreeing to volunteer. Lindsey Cross is one of our rising star freshmen. She is strong on environmental issues. She has strengthened our caucus, and I think it would be great if you would support her. So thank you.
Okay. Well, you're facing your own reelection campaign right here in the North Tampa area in November. And I guess I don't even need to ask, but I will. You think the same issues will resonate in your district as they did in Tom Keene's district?
Actually, I do, because I can take the example of last legislative session and even pre-session events that I did leading into 2024. People are mad about property insurance. They are mad about how these costs are rising. They're mad about how high rents are, and they're frustrated over a woman's right to choose. And so I think those issues in Florida are universal right now. That's all people wanted to talk about in my district. So that those are the issues that I will talk to folks about, and in a way that I help them to understand the differences in policy when it comes to electing a Republican or Democrat on these issues. Yeah. What the Republicans did was give a $3 billion bailout to the property insurance industry in the last special session that we had on this issue. $3 billion, Shelley.
Yeah,
that is a huge amount of money. They provided no direct relief to homeowners.
No relief.
They said, we're not even sure if this is really going to work, but we're going to try it anyway. Contrast that with what the Democrats offered, including a bill that I'm carrying on behalf of my caucus this year to provide more accountability and transparency in that industry and to find ways to get money back in the hands of homeowners. So it's a very clear choice.
Yeah. All right. And again, Representative Driscoll has her election coming up in November. So let me ask you to give your website and how people can get in touch with you or your campaign, you as a legislator, if they need help with an issue from the Florida legislature, and you as a candidate.
Yeah, absolutely. It's venturesforflorida.com. That's venturesforflorida.com. And of course, please sign up to volunteer, sign up to stay in touch. We are in session, which means we cannot fundraise. So please don't try to send any money right now. But I would love to stay in touch with you and keep you informed. I should also mention, Shelley, that I've started doing this thing on Tuesday nights where I do a live stream, 8 p.m. every Tuesday. I try to keep that commitment. I've had to do this from places like noisy airports and restaurants, but it was Tom Keene's watch party, actually, the restaurant that I did that from on that election night. But I've committed to making sure that I'm bringing people information about what's happening in Tallahassee, because a lot of folks just don't know.
They don't know.
But then I also invite people to share their stories with me, because I want to hear how these policies are impacting them. And the responses that we get are beautiful. And we're going to also start featuring folks from around the state on the live stream to share their story, so people can understand and see how much they have in common with folks around the state and that they are not alone. And so we are building an army. We are building the army that we need to take back this state. And I would love it if any of your listeners would tune in on Tuesdays nights at 8 p.m. It's on my social media channel. So you can just go to my page at Instagram, Facebook, X, or even YouTube and watch. And we would greatly appreciate it.
And that your Facebook page and Twitter page and Instagram, that would all be Fentress for Florida?
It is. It's Fentress for FL. The Florida is shortened to the abbreviation FL. So Fentress, F-O-R-F-L, on all social media handles.
Okay. All right. Well, is there anything I haven't asked you that you think it would be important for the listeners to know before I let you go? Because our time is almost up.
Yeah, I know it's so much to cover. Did you talk about the child labor law at all?
We didn't. We didn't get to talk about that. We only have a couple minutes, but if you want to run through it quickly, that'd be great.
Yeah, like in 30 seconds, just to say that I heard that there was a child labor bill in the legislature. I thought, oh, great, we're going to protect our kids. No, Shelley, that's not what it is, girl.
No. We had the Florida Policy Institute on last week on the show, and we had one of their analysts talk about the child labor bill last week, but it was before it actually passed.
Oh, it passed on the floor along strict party lines. And what I see, it's a fundamental difference in how we should fuel our economy. And the Republicans are trying to make our kids a cheap labor source at a time where they should be focused on getting a good education and preparing for their future in life. And the Democrats voted to protect our kids. So I just wanted to uplift that bill. There's also a bill moving in the Senate. So unfortunately, this will probably become Florida law. But this is the consequence, right? Like of not understanding what's happening in Tallahassee. This is why we have to push out more information to the people. This is why I'm so grateful for you, Shelley, for caring about what's happening here and letting me tell the people, because we can turn this around in election. If we don't like what we're seeing, then all we got to do is vote and make sure that our friends are registered to vote, make sure that our neighbors are, and make sure that people turn out at the polls, and let's move our state in a better direction. I understand the assignment and what I have been tasked with as the leader at this time, and I'm okay with it, and I'm willing to lead this charge, but I can't do it alone. I need people to chip in and to help with their efforts to make sure that we have the people power that we need to volunteer and turn the state around.
Yeah, well, we here at Midpoint, we pay close attention to what's happening in Tallahassee, because like you, I don't think people pay enough attention and I don't think they get enough information. So yeah. I appreciate your Tuesday night roundups, and I encourage people to take advantage of that and stay informed, because we have a big election coming up in November. So I want to thank you. That's all we have time for today, but I want to thank you for being with us. Democratic House Leader Fentress Driscoll and my earlier guest, Representative Tom Keene from Florida House District 35. I appreciate so much that you took time out of your busy schedule to join us on Midpoint. We're so grateful to hear from you. I want to thank also our Operations Chief, Dwayne Terry, and our WMNF Volunteer Operations Staff, Jessica Green, for getting us on the air and keeping us there. We are in the midst of our WMNF spring fundraiser right now, and the WMNF powers that be have given me, a mere volunteer programmer, a huge fundraising goal. So I would really appreciate your support from Midpoint so that we can continue to bring you such important and informative guests and public affairs programs that keep you in the know. It's so easy. Just go to WMNF.org/donate, and right below the amount you are donating, where it says designate to, there's a drop-down menu. Find MPW from Midpoint with Shelley to direct your contribution to this show. I really appreciate that. Thanks so much. Now stay here for Talking Animals with Duncan Strauss. We are WMNF Tampa.